You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Why don't you guys go ahead and put your bags on your head, because I don't want to see your faces. Okay, not the second part, but how about put them on the first part? If you did not make a mask, sorry, you missed your shot. And somewhere, there we go. Okay. So, I want to do a quick survey of those of you that are wearing masks. The rest of you, you can't raise your hand and you don't get a prize. It's a non-existent prize, but you don't get it either. So, I want to know, am I really loud, by the way? Because I sound incredibly loud in my own ears here, but that's probably because I'm wearing a bag over my head. So some of you maybe are smarter than the rest of us. So, my question for you is, first of all, raise your hand if your mask has holes in it. Okay, all right, good, look around, if you can even see, because this is kind of awkward. Okay, I want to know, did you color? Raise your hand if you colored something, drew something on your mask. All right, so some of you, but not everybody. All right, now my question is, does your mask have, say, a dark color? Did you use a dark color, like a blue, a black, or brown? Raise your hand if you have a dark color on your mask. All right, good. How about light colors? Do you have a light color on your mask there? Some of you have light colors. All right, how many of you have both light and dark colors? Okay, good. Good to know. How many of you drew some form of hair on your masks? Eyelashes, fur, hair, okay. All right, how many of you put a mouth into your mask? Do you have anybody with more than just eyes? All right, good. All right. Now, there, for the most part, we've raised our hands for different things. How many of you, let's see, drew any other facial features? Not cut a hole, but maybe you drew a nose or ears or something like that. Raise your hand. All right, so basically, all of you have raised your hands for different things. So not everybody has the exact same mask on. Now, I want to ask this question. How many of you that are wearing brown paper bags over your head as masks, how many of you are wearing brown paper bags over your heads as masks? So for the most part, everybody that's wearing a brown paper bag over their head raised their hand that they are wearing a brown paper bag over their head because, in essence, even though our masks are different, we are all wearing brown bags over our head. Now I'm going to take this off because I'm close to hyperventilating. So you can do that too. Woo! Fresh air. But here's the deal, right? Each of you that chose to make masks, some of you were too cool for that. That's fine. But each of you that made masks, they were different on the outside. But in essence, everybody was wearing a brown paper bag. Everybody had the same makeup. And so this series that we're doing, this series called Me this month, we're going to look at that. We're going to look at who we are as people, who we are as created by God. And there's a big drip spot here, so I don't want to get under that. But we're going to look at who we are. And one of the things about this idea of these masks is that on the outside right now, without masks, we look different. As the video did a great job explaining, you know, we are different. There's different things that are happening. There's different things about us. Some of us look different. Some of us are furrier than others. Some of us are taller. Some of us are shorter. Some of us have big old eyes. Some of us have a big old mouth. Some of us have big old lips, which I get accused of a lot. But we're different. But I want you to understand that, and there's people that are not in this room. I mean, for the most part, we look like we're from central Pennsylvania, for the most part. We're not a very diverse group, but that's a reflection of where we live. But obviously, if you went to the United Nations building, you would see a very diverse group of people. And despite the differences that we have, despite the fact that we look different, there is something, just like the paper bag, that unifies all of us. And that is this idea of the image of God. And if you have been to church or been around church people, You may have heard people talk about being made in the image of God. And I think a lot of times we throw that idea out, we talk about it, but we don't know what it really means. We kind of have a general idea. So I want to look at that this morning, and then we're going to use this idea to kind of build on over the next few weeks of this series. And frankly, I'm only teaching for half of the series. We've got some guest teachers that are going to be coming in and sharing some things over the next few weeks as well. But if you have a Bible or the YouVersion app, go to Genesis chapter 1. And that's where we find this idea of the image of God. And this is what's happening. This is the story, the account of creation, of God creating everything, creating the universe, creating the earth, creating all of it. And this is what we call the sixth day. If you're looking at the 7 days, actually there's only 6 days of creation. Seventh day he rested, the Sabbath day. But on the sixth day, this is what's going on. And there's a lot of stuff we can talk about here, and we'll talk about it at some point, but not today. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them, just in case you didn't get it the first time he said it. Male and female, he created them. Going on, it says, God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said something. "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food." And it was so. So here's this idea of the image of God, and we're going to talk about this. I want to unpack it, explain what it means in there, but I want you to get this idea this week, and we're going to have these little phrases throughout the month. But the point that I want you to walk away with today is this idea that you represent, if you want to say it with a little, like, you represent, you know, but however you want to say it, if you just want to say you represent, that's fine too. But the idea that you and I, we represent, and I'll explain what that means and why, but I want you to walk away with that, that you represent, and what you represent is the God of the universe. So I kind of, there's my punchline. But you represent God, and that's a big deal, and that's what this idea of the image of God is. So kind of get that idea that you represent, and that's a big deal, because that affects a lot of the way we live. So I want to talk about this idea of image. So what does the image of God mean? I mean, let's think about the word image first of all. When you think about an image is a picture or a reflection or something that is a stand-in, if you will, for something else. We know that in English. You know, we talk about, oh, that was a nice image. You're referring to something that is a stand-in for the real thing. And so this idea of image is not, I don't know. Again, if you grew up in church, this is probably what I'm going to share is a little different maybe than what you've heard, what you've learned. And it's kind of where I used to understand it. But now that I've what I'm sharing is how I understand it now, but it was kind of different when I grew up, because we had this idea that image of God. So here's the deal, right? And if you're not from church, if this is your first time here or anything like that, that's cool. Just kind of ignore what I'm saying. Just kind of nod vaguely. I'm fine with that. And then we'll get into some stuff that's going to make a little more sense. But for those of you that grew up in church or have been a part of church for a while, we have this idea that there's something different between human beings and animals. Now, I think for the most part, we would assume that there's plenty different between human beings and plants and rocks and things like that. But animals were kind of the closest thing to us. But there's still something different. And that thing is the image of God. That the animals God created, that all of them, the birds and the fish and all of that, none of them were created in the image of God the way humanity was. And so there's this understanding, okay, if there's something different, what is that different? And people have tried to explain that. One of the things that is often used out is the idea of intellect, emotion, and will. Intellect, emotion, and will. And the fact that animals don't demonstrate those qualities that human beings do. I would disagree. Now, there's a lot of smart people that have researched this and probably know more than I do, but I would say I would disagree, because I think this idea of intellect, that animals, that we can think, but animals can't think. That's not entirely true, because you can teach an old dog new tricks. You can teach dolphins to jump through hoops. I mean, there's plenty of things that prove that animals have intelligence, that animals can be taught things. So that kind of waters that down a little bit. Well, this idea of emotion, that animals don't have emotion. Let me tell you about my dog. My dog Dexter is a Jack Russell. Our dog Dexter is a Jack Russell Terrier. And when our kids, and the kids don't know this, but when our kids aren't there, our dog mopes. Like there is something wrong with the world because our kids aren't there. Am I right? I mean, he just like kind of is there. He's always tripping over us as adults when the kids aren't there. Like there's something wrong with him. He's emotional. He has issues. And that's the kind of the thing. I mean, there's an emotion thing, and I think a lot of you know that. You know, when you say bad dog to a dog, you know, it demonstrates there's some like, oh, some remorse there, some emotion there. Not that he's loving people, or maybe he does show love. I don't know. And when you say bad cat, like cat doesn't do anything because cats are stupid. But dogs demonstrate emotion. You know, I told you about the difference between the wolf and the flame matches. Okay. That's a joke. I'll tell you about it later. Anyway, but then this idea of will means that, will means that, okay, we have the ability to make choices, to do things our way rather than another way. And so we kind of think, well, humans do that, but animals don't. But I would again disagree with that, because I think animals demonstrate their own will as well. When, I'm going with frame of reference. I don't have a chimpanzee. I don't have a whale, but I have a dog. Okay, and when you walk the dog with the leash, the dog wants to go his own way. You kind of sometimes have to yank or say heel or whatever to get them to do their own thing. And so that dog is demonstrating his own will, and you kind of have to break that to say, no, stay here, heel. This is where you need to be. So all that to say, I just totally got tripped on. All that to say that animals do, in some sense, demonstrate emotion, intellect, and will. So that idea that that's the difference between us and animals, that that's the image of God, I would say is not accurate. The other thing that's often used is this idea of moral capacity, which I know is a big fancy phrase, but the idea that the human beings can choose between right and wrong, and animals can't. And I would say to some degree that is true, but I don't think that's the extent of what image of God is. Okay, and again, a lot of this stuff is like really cerebral, brainy, thinky stuff, theological, and that's okay because it's going to set up some things, so if you bear with me as we go through this for the beginning here. But I would say that this idea of choosing between right and wrong is not what makes us unique from animals. I think the answer to this, to what image of God is, actually looks, we have to look at the context. The Bible was written, especially the Old Testament, was written by Hebrew authors, written by people that were Israelites. Moses writing much of the beginning of the Old Testament. And they were written to people that understood the context of things. To us, the idea of image, again, it's kind of like maybe we talk about it when it's about a picture or something like that, but really we don't refer to image in the same way that they did back then. And so here's the deal, right? To an Old Testament person, an image had a very different feel. An image was something that represented someone else. And the first part of that is that this image was reflecting. That an image would reflect the greatness or the glory, if you will, all the things that were amazing about the person that it was supposed to represent. So a lot of times an image will be created, or another word, which we'll get to in just a second, is idol. An idol was something that was physically created. An image was something that was physically created to represent someone else, whether it be a god, whether it be a king or a ruler. But the idea of an image in the Old Testament, very clearly, if you say image, they're talking about something that would represent someone else. And the audience understood that. The people got that. And so this idea of reflecting is the first part of this image. So a reflection was something that was reflecting the original. It wasn't as great as the original, but it was a reflection of it. Like when if you see a photo, if you have a photo of someone you love, that photo might be great, but for the most part, you'd probably rather the person in, personally there, rather than just looking at their image. So, reflecting. Let's talk about this. So let's go back here. Genesis chapter 1. This is what God says. Let us make mankind in our image. And first of all, just interesting enough, the Hebrew word for mankind is Adam, which is where we get Adam and Eve. So it's not only just a title of his name, but also the description of mankind, humanity. Let us make mankind in our image. And the word here, image, is this idea of the Hebrew word is Selechem. We've got a lot of that because it's Hebrew. And it means an idol or an image or something that represents the original. So again, let us make mankind in our image. God is saying, and we'll talk about the let us thing. That's a whole other discussion about the Trinity. But for all intents and purposes, we're saying, God is saying, I'm going to make man in my image. And the word there is this idea of an idol, of a representative. I'm going to make man in my image, in our likeness. And again, the word likeness is a similar kind of word, a synonym. But it means something that fits in the mold, something that has a similarity, a resemblance to it. So God is saying, I'm about to create humanity, and I'm going to create humanity in my image, in my likeness, in my representativeness, as an idol, as something physical that represents them. So that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over the livestock and all the wild animals and over all the creatures that move along the ground. I'll come back to that in a second. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Lest there be any discussion about, women aren't created in the image of God because they came out of man or something like that. God created male and female in his image. And that's how he created them. So this idea of image, when God's saying this, he's saying, I want to make man, humanity, to represent me. Because you represent. He says, I want them to reflect who I am. And an image was something, again, that reflected the greatness, that reflected the glory, that reflected the awesomeness of the person that was made to represent. That's all great, I'm sure. But let's look at it in context. I think it was April and May, we went through this the book of Daniel in what we called the Strong Series. And in Daniel chapter 3, we looked at this story, and many of you, even if you aren't from churches, you probably heard the story of the fiery furnace. And I want to refer you to this because I think it brings up something that we often miss when we think about the image of God, this idea there. And so here's the story in Daniel chapter 3. It's about King Nebuchadnezzar at the time was the king. He was a great king. He was a powerful king. He was the king of the land at the time of Babylon. And it says that he made an image. Can you see that word? An image of gold, 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide. It was huge, and we talked about that a few months ago. And he set it up on a plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. So he made this image, and this image was meant as a representative of him. And again, this is something, as you start to process this stuff, it all starts to fit together that Nebuchadnezzar was making an image to represent him. He was making it huge. It was gigantic. And it was made of solid gold because he wanted something to say, hey, this is to represent how amazing I am, how awesome I am, to represent my glory, if you will, to represent my power, to represent that I am the king, I am the one in charge, and you're going to see how great I am because I'm going to make an image that's going to represent me. That's going to reflect who I am. Now, of course, the image wasn't Nebuchadnezzar, but it was something to stand in for him. So much so that he went on a few verses later and he tells his leaders, he says, look, then a herald loudly proclaimed, nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, I believe we had kazoos for that day. And all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. Why was this a big deal? Because Nebuchadnezzar says, I'm making an image that's going to represent me, that's going to represent my greatness, that's going to represent my power, and you, little people in my kingdom, are going to bow down to that because that's representing me. That is as good as me. It's not me. But it's as good as me because it's reflecting my glory. It's reflecting my awesomeness. And so the king was pretty upset when obviously these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, did not bow down. And we know maybe you don't know the whole story, but the story goes on. These guys didn't. They were thrown in the furnace, but God miraculously saved them. And Nebuchadnezzar changed his mind a little bit about who was all great and powerful. But the image that was there was representing Nebuchadnezzar. That's why he had people bow down to it. Because Nebuchadnezzar, as many empirical. One of them has to do with counting. One of them has to do with an empire. But as many rulers were, wanted to show how great they were. And so this was something that represented him. Does that make sense? You follow me so far? Like, nod your head. Just pretend like you're nodding your head. Okay. So that's the deal, that this was something that Nebuchadnezzar set up to kind of try to display for everyone to see his greatness, to reflect that in some way. And that's why it was big. That's why it was gold. And that's why he had everyone bow down to it, because bowing down to that image represented bowing down to him and to his greatness. And so then there's another little passage in the Bible that I don't care if you've never, ever, ever heard anybody ever talk about church before, but you're probably familiar with these little 10 things called the commandments, the 10 commandments. And one of them, the second one to be specific, God shares this with Moses and to the Israelites. Here's one of the 10 commandments. It is, you shall not make for yourself an image. It is like raining in here. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. So one of the commandments that is, you know, sometimes they'll say you shall not make any graven images, if you know the King James, if you grew up learning it that way. But the idea was that you're not supposed to make an image. And again, this idea to me, when I was younger, okay, this means that God doesn't want us, you know, to make little idols and start bowing down to them, not to have a shrine in our house that we worship. But if you look at the word that is used here, it's a synonym to the word that God uses to make an image. To make people in his image, create mankind in his image. It's not something about them making something else. The commandment is here is not to make an image in the form of anything in the heaven or above or the earth beneath or the waters below. God's basically saying, look, I don't want you to try to make an image of me. There's a guy named J.I. Packer who is a theologian guy, and he wrote a book called Knowing God, and he has a really interesting chapter in there about this idea of worshiping images and idols and looking at how there's so many things that we make as idols. I mean, even something as simple as having a picture of Jesus on your wall that maybe you go and pray near that because it reminds you of Jesus. And on some level, first of all, Jesus probably didn't pose for that photo. But on some level, that is this idea of idolatry or of making an image. Because here's the deal. Here's what God is saying. He's not upset that we pray. He's not upset that people would say, hey, God, I want to make something to represent you because I love you so much. But what he's saying, the reason why you're not supposed to make an image or a graven image or an image in the form of anything in heaven above, earth below, the waters, is because God can't be contained by an image. That God is so amazing, he is so wonderful, he is so glorious, he is so powerful, he is so awesome, that if we try to create something, it's always going to fall short. And so that's why it was one of the Ten Commandments. It wasn't, you know, don't set up an idol that's a bull that you worship, or some kind of cow or a fish or anything like that. His point wasn't something else. He's saying, don't try to make an image of me because you cannot contain me. Because I am too great. And so this idea of image is all throughout the Old Testament. And I could share verse after verse after verse after verse about this idea of image. Because an image was a reflection of the glory of someone else. Nebuchadnezzar's image was a reflection of his glory. God says, you can't make an image, humans, of me because my glory is so great. And glory, again, we've talked about this word before. It's this idea of just the greatness. Everything that is wonderful about God or wonderful about a person is called their glory. So this idea of image is a reflection. It's not the original, but it's pretty close, but it's still not as good as the original. But it's close. But it's not as good, because it's not the original. But it's something that reflects the glory. Now, one of the things that you need to be aware of is God created, on the sixth day, he created humanity in his image. So it says that we were created to reflect God's glory. We were created to as his representative on this earth, to reflect his glory. But when God created Adam and Eve, there was no sin in the world. And so at some point, and dude, I don't know what this is like because I wasn't there. But at some level, this image then was amazing because there was no sin. And now, after the fall, after Adam and Eve ate from the fruit of that tree, after sin entered the world and the curse entered everything, that image became tarnished. And so it's important for you to understand that that was a tarnished reflection, that it wasn't that our reflection today of God, of being created in His image, we do not reflect Him as well as Adam and Eve did. And I suppose an argument can be made as well as Jesus did. Although that's a whole other discussion about Jesus being fully man and fully God, so I guess He can't reflect Himself if He is Himself. But I want you to understand that just kind of as we discuss this idea, as we look into it, that the reflection of God that we have is tarnished. It's messed up by sin. And I shared this actually 2 whole years ago. We did a series in here called Mirrors. And I shared this idea and I talked about a mirror. And, you know, if you look at a clean mirror, you see a reflection. And that clean mirror gives you an accurate reflection for the most part, because, you know, you can see things well if it's a straight mirror and doesn't have any scratches or whatever. But at the same time, it's just a reflection. It's not really you. You know, despite Phantom of the Opera or something like that, you can't reach through the mirror and pull someone out. The mirror is just an image. It's just a reflection. It's not the real thing. But then when sin entered the world, it's almost like someone came along and kind of tarnished that whole thing. Or like, you know, I don't know what it's been like for you guys lately, but with the weather being, you know, temperatures and all over the place, you know, get into a car and the windows are all foggy or covered with snow or, you know, whatever, you can kind of see out, but you don't get to see things the way they really are because there's ice on your window or fog or, you know, the same idea with a mirror, that if the mirror is tarnished, if the mirror is old or dirty, you're not going to see things the way they really are because it's affected by that. So I need you to understand that our image, we are created in the image of God. We are created in a way to represent and reflect Him, but that's not perfect. And that means that you're not perfect. And that means the person next to you and around you and living near you and working with you, those people are imperfect reflections as well. And so maybe we need to cut each other a little bit of slack. But understand that we are created in the image of God. So it's this idea of reflecting, and that reflection was tarnished. The second thing that the Old Testament idea of image meant was this idea of ruling, is that a lot of times there was a concept called a vassal, V-A-S-S-A-L. And it was a way that empires, that emperors or pharaohs, depending on, or Caesars or whatever, to whoever was ruling at the time, one of the ways that they ruled was through a vassal arrangement. And basically, a vassal was simply someone that represented them, that ruled on their behalf. And I don't even know, I mean, governors don't really work that way in the United States because they don't work for the president. They're independent. But something, I don't know. I'm sure there's some idea out there, and somebody will tell me afterwards. But this idea meant that a king or an emperor or a pharaoh or Caesar could rule a gigantic empire and be able to maintain control because he would appoint vassals. He would appoint representatives that would govern certain areas, and they would rule on his behalf. They would work on his behalf. And so everything that vassal did, that ruler did, was to be for the benefit of the main emperor, of the main leader. And so this idea of ruling, when someone talked about an image, they would often be ruling in the image of Caesar, was a phrase that was used. Because they would be representing Caesar as that governor, as that vassal, that person that would rule on their behalf. And so everything they did was for the benefit of the emperor. Every compliment they got had to go to the emperor. Every financial asset they received had to go to the emperor. And so this was a concept that was all over the place. I mean, the way the empires ruled back then was through this idea of a vassal. And again, the phrase that was often used was that they would rule as the image of the supreme emperor, of the pharaoh, of whoever was in charge at the time. And so so this concept continues, and that's what God says then in Genesis 28. He says, I want to make these people in my image. And he says, God blessed them and said to them, I want you to be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. And subdue means to bring it under control, to take over, to be in control of it, which is what a vassal would do. Your job, you're responsible for this area. If your area gets out of control, you will probably be killed, depending on how good the emperor was or not. But you're responsible for that. That is your job. And so you need to do a good job subduing that area, that part of the kingdom, and manage it. And then rule, which the word means to rule. And so he says you need to fill the earth and subdue it, and then rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So God gives Adam and Eve, gives his creation. He said, you're created in my image, you're reflecting me, but also you have some responsibilities to rule. You are to rule over everything. You're the ones that are in charge. God did not put fish in charge. He didn't put talking trees in charge. He put us in charge. We are his representatives on this earth to rule on his behalf, which has some consequences or some, not necessarily consequences, but some responsibilities that are tied into it, which we'll come to in a little bit here. But this idea of ruling on behalf of someone else was a very common Old Testament image concept. And so God's saying that to Adam and Eve. Hey, you're creating my image. Of course, you're representing me. So not only do you reflect my glory, but you're also going to rule on my behalf, because that's what images did. That's what they did on behalf of their leader. And so there's an interesting other story that, again, if you haven't grown up in church, but even if you've seen the movie The Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, I don't think they ever did it in The Prince of Egypt. But there's this infamous scene that we describe as the golden calf, right? How many of you have heard of the golden calf in the Exodus story? All right, good. And again, maybe you didn't raise your hand because you don't even realize you know it. But it's the story of, you know, the people were miraculously rescued from Egypt. God brought them out of Egypt. He redeemed them. There were 10 plagues, miracles that were shown how great God was. And then they crossed the Red Sea in a miraculous way. And they go to this place called Mount Sinai. And God says, look, I want you to have the Israelites camp on the base of Mount Sinai. And while they're camping there, Moses, who was the leader at the time, says, Moses, I want you to come to the top of the mountain, and I'm going to give you my law. I'm going to speak with you and give you the law, the rules of these people that are now mine, that I have redeemed. I want to give you the rules that they're supposed to live by. And part of those rules are what we call the Ten Commandments. And so at this point, Moses is up on top of this mountain. And God is speaking to him in some supernatural way. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago. That's also the point where God Moses said, I want to see some of your glory. And God said, you can't even show you my glory. You'd die. He says, but I'll let you kind of look at the back of me as I kind of go by. And Moses' face shone because of God's amazing glory. And so this is all happening on top of this mountain. Meanwhile, the people, the whole nation, who is, you know, could be millions of people at this point, are all camped at the bottom of this mountain waiting for Moses. Where did he go? Where has he been? Like, he went up there and he hasn't come back. I mean, I don't know if they thought he was just going for a potty break, smoke break, or what. And there was smoke, a lot of smoke up there. But God covered the mountain with smoke and fire and all that. But anyway, he didn't come back. It was a long time. It was a while. Where was he? And so you have this golden calf issue that takes place. And I want you to understand something about this story, because I think a lot of times, as I looked at it, again, as I grew up and kind of understood this as I watched the Ten Commandments, because Charlton Heston and Hollywood know exactly what the Bible's all about. Right. But as I watched it, I was like, what's the deal? So wait, they just saw all these miracles. They saw God do all these incredible things on their behalf. And not even like a few days, a few weeks later, they're like, oh, well, let's just make a calf and worship that instead. But the interesting thing about this story is that they didn't worship the calf instead of God. Okay? Listen to that. They didn't worship the calf instead of God. They worshiped the calf as an image of God. Let's look at the story. So, when the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, they gathered around Aaron, who was the second in charge, and said, come, make us gods who will go before us. As for this fellow Moses, who brought us out of Egypt, we don't know what has happened to him. They said, make us gods who will go before us. We need gods. We need something to worship, because the guy that was leading us, and he was talking to God in person and doing all that, like, we don't know what happened to him, so we need some kind of god to worship, because Moses is gone. Goes on and says, Aaron answered them, take off the gold earrings that your wives, your sons, and your daughters are wearing and bring them to me. So they took off all their gold and they brought them to Aaron. He took what they had handed him and made it into an idol. Also, image is the same word, cast in the shape of a calf. Okay, so we've got the calf there. That really happened. Okay, which again, why did they suddenly start worshiping a cow when they saw God do all this? Well, here's the deal. He made into a calf, fashioning with a tool, which is an interesting play on the words that God used when he created humanity. It's a similar word, to be made into a mold, to be created. And we'll talk about that actually in a couple weeks, about the intricacy of our creation. Anyway, so they made an idol cast in the shape of a calf. Then they said, "These are your gods." Okay, so far still, it sounds like, wow, they just started worshiping some other calf. They gave up totally on the God of the universe that miraculously took them out of Egypt. And so they said, "These are your gods, Israel." And then this is what they say: "Who brought you up out of Egypt?" I don't know if you can see that. "Who brought you up out of Egypt?" So here's the deal, right? Moses disappeared. They're wondering what happens. And they didn't suddenly start worshiping some other calf, some other god. Aaron says, "Look, we're going to make, since we can't see God anymore, since Moses is gone, we're going to make an image of that God. We're going to make a representative of the true and living God." That's what they were trying to do here. They weren't worshiping someone else. They said, "We haven't seen God. We haven't seen Moses, who was connected with him. So let's make something to represent him." So they made an image. They made an idol of God. And that's what they said. This calf is now going to represent the God who brought you out of Egypt. This is going to represent the God that caused the 10 plagues. This is going to represent the God that sent the angel of death during Passover. This is going to represent the God that parted the Red Sea. This calf here is to represent the God. In a huge twist and irony, at this particular moment, Moses is on top of the mountain getting the 10 commandments, where God is saying, "Don't make anything to represent me because you can't contain me." And they're doing it on the bottom of the mountain. So the story goes on and says, "When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and he announced, 'Tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord.'" That's capital L-O-R-D. We've talked about this before. If you see capital L-O-R-D, it is the divine name, the word Yahweh. It's the name that God revealed himself to Moses. It's the name that means "I am." And it's the name that Jesus said before Abraham was, "I am," and people wanted to kill him because he was claiming to be God. And they said, "This will be a festival to Yahweh. We are going to have a festival to the true and living God that we are representing here in this calf." So the next day, the people rose early and sacrificed burnt offerings and presented fellowship offerings. Afterward, they sat down to eat and drink and got up to indulge in revelry. But the deal with this story is that they were making an image. Because they were saying, Moses isn't here to rule over us. We haven't seen God for a while. So let's make the calf as the representative, as the one that's going to rule on his behalf. And so this idea of image means this coming back to this ruling. And so this whole story here was about them not making some other god and worshiping some other made-up god. They were just trying to contain the true and living God in an image, in a calf. So, image. It means reflecting, it means ruling, and it means something else too, and I'm going to catch up. Oh, and finally, it means responsibility. Oh yeah, thanks. It means responsibility. And this idea, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, that if you were a ruler on behalf of the king, you had responsibility. If you're part of the kingdom as a vassal, as an image representing the true king, as representing the emperor, the Caesar, the Pharaoh, whomever was in charge at the time, if you were representing them and you didn't do a good job, you would either be removed from your position or removed from your body. Your head might be removed from your body. I mean, it was just an issue of you were representing them, and therefore, as the one ruling on his behalf, you had responsibility to it. And there's so much here that I can't unpack because I just don't have time for it. But when you look at and consider Herod and what was going on, why Herod was considered king was because Caesar had kind of put him in charge as a vassal of that area when Jesus was born. And there's just so much more stuff there. But they understood that there was a responsibility there, that if you were an image, if you represented Caesar, you better do a good job. And you better do a good job for the sake of Caesar, not for your own sake. If money was filling your pocket or your wallet that should have been going to Caesar and Caesar found out about it, you're dead. If money was supposed to go to the emperor and you were keeping some of it, you're done. I mean, you as an image of the emperor, of the king, as a vassal, as a governor, they're all the same kind of word, you had a responsibility to rule on their behalf. You were reflecting who they were, and so everything about the way you acted represented them. And so if you were a sniveling loser and Caesar found out about it, he might kill you. I don't know. You were supposed to rule on his behalf, and you also had some responsibility. You had to maintain the kingdom. Now listen to this. You had to maintain the kingdom on behalf of the king. Another word for this was called stewardship. You were to be a steward of the kingdom on behalf of the king. If you were his image, if you were his vassal, if you were his governor, your job was responsibility and to steward, to manage the kingdom on behalf of the king. And it all comes back around together. So let's look at another passage here, or the passage in Genesis. Then God goes on and says, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, just in case you thought you missed something, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. And so again, as you look at this idea of an image, this is the it makes total sense to someone reading this from an Israelite, from a Hebrew context. Well, of course, they're reflecting the king. Oh, of course, they're ruling on his behalf. Oh, of course, they have responsibility for all of creation, for all of his area. And so, you know, there is something to be said here about our role. We are responsible for God's creation. Does that mean that animals are more important than us? No, actually, he just said that a few verses earlier, that we are to make them submit to us. We are to rule over them. But it also means that we do have some responsibility to manage, to steward, not just resources, but all of God's creation. So everything that we have, everything that is God's, which is everything, it's our responsibility to manage that because we are his image. We are representing the king. And so that's what you've got. You've got this idea of an image. That we are created in the image of God means that we are reflecting his glory. That is, we were created, unlike any other animal, any other creature, any other fish, bird, whatever, as amazing as some of those are. Have you guys ever seen an Andean condor? Have you ever seen one? Andean condor? No. There's one. What's it called? The Brandywine Zoo in Delaware. I think it's bigger than this building. It's like a whole bustling, like, I don't know, like 2 acres. It's a gigantic zoo. Actually, you can laugh or something, dude. It's Delaware. Come on. I love Delaware, and you don't want to make fun of me because I'm from Delaware. But things aren't always as big as Texas, you know, in Delaware. That's why I'm my size, and I'm not bigger because I'm from Delaware, I guess. But anyway, there's the Brandywine Zoo, and it costs, like, I think they've raised the prices to, like, $1.50 a person. And Brandywine Zoo has, like, I think they have dogs there and goats. Like, you go to Belleville, and they've got more than the Brandywine Zoo in Belleville. But anyway, one of the things the Brandywine Zoo does have is an Andean condor. And an Andean condor, and I might not be pronouncing it right, but it's from the Andes Mountains, and it is a bird that, as it stands on the ground, is taller than me, with its wings in. It is a massive, massive, massive bird. And I remember seeing it. It looks like something out of, like, the Muppets or Jim Henson. It has this, like, it totally doesn't look like a real creature. But even as amazing as that, his wingspan is some, like, gigantic, huge number, like 5 feet or maybe 30 feet. I don't know. But it's some big, big number about how just gigantic these birds are. And so if you ever go to Delaware and you've got the cash saved up to go to the Brandywine Zoo, you can go to the Brandywine Zoo, and, you know, actually, I don't even think the condor is actually at the ticket gate, so you can see it without even paying. I think they're trying to sucker you in. They're like, oh, wow, they got one of those. Must be awesome. Here's my $1.50. But anyway, just as amazing and majestic and incredible as that bird is, it is still not as amazing and majestic as us, because birds don't have the image of God. Birds aren't set up to reflect God's glory. They don't in some way say, hey, this is how great God is. They don't in some way say, this is how amazing. I mean, I guess in some way they do, but in the image, the idea. And they don't rule, and they don't have the responsibility that we have. And so as being created in the image of God, God says, look, you're on purpose. You're the way I want you. Because you look different, and you smell different, and you talk different, but you're created in my image. And so there's something of value in that. And so this idea of being created in the image of God, it's not just that, hey, yeah, we're different than animals or you know, we can think. It's so much deeper. It's that God says to us, to humanity, saying, you know what? God is here. God is present. But in some way, he says, you know what? I'm here, but you're going to represent me. You're going to rule on my behalf. You're in charge. You guys are going to do this. And this is totally not in my notes, but I think it's kind of interesting that it's almost the same kind of the next level thing that Jesus says to his followers right after he rises from the dead and leaves the earth. He says, look, I've been showing you what to do, but now you've got the keys. You go. You make disciples, teaching them to obey everything I've commanded. You do that. You've got it now. You're representing me. And so this idea of image means that we are representing God. And so that's the point. You represent. You need to understand that you, yes, you represent the God of the universe in a multifaceted kind of way. In some way, you reflect his glory and you rule on his behalf and you have responsibility because of that. But that's this idea of image, is that it's something spectacular. So what does that mean? What does it mean? Let's talk about using your imagination. Okay. Because we all had, with the paper bag masks, you know, they were very different and on the outside, but in essence, it was all the same. And that's the same with all of God's humanity, all of the people that have been created, all of humans, male, female, that God created, were created differently, but yet all of this essence, the same factor, the same unifying thing of being created in his image. So the first thing that's important to understand about this, why it matters, is that we have value. So treasure life. You have value. No matter whether you feel like it or not, I don't care about your feelings. We'll talk about them next month. I don't care about them then either. I don't care how you feel. Because some days we don't feel good. Sometimes that's physically, we don't feel good. Sometimes we just don't feel good about ourselves. I guess you don't feel well. Sorry, adverb. But it's not a matter of how we feel. It's not a matter about how others feel about us. It's about how God created us. It says, look, you have value. You, every part of you, the annoying parts of you, the good parts of you, the parts of you that you feel don't quite measure up, the parts of you that wish had you had more hair on, the parts of you that you wish had less hair on, I don't know. Your left-handedness, your right-handedness, your shortness, your tallness, all of that is part of who you are. And you are created in God's image. God's given you the keys. He said, you can do this. You're representing me. You're ruling on my behalf. So there's value to life, every life. And I'm not going to get into that much more over the next couple weeks. Next week, Kirk is going to be teaching and sharing just the importance of caring for our bodies, caring for the way God has created us. And then the week after that, I've got a friend of mine, Jenny Summers, who was the vice president of the class when I went to college. And she's now the director of the Pregnancy Center in State College. And she's going to come and share a little bit about how we have value because of the way God designed us and created us. And talk about that. So I'm not going to go into much more on this, but I just want you to get that basic concept that all of our life is valuable. We need to understand that. There's no one that's not good enough. No matter how much society thinks they're not worth it, there is no baby that is not worth keeping. I mean, we have value. Every human being has been created in the image of God. No matter how they are created, that's how God wanted them. And so we have value, so we need to treasure life. We need to understand that. That's important. And again, we'll be talking about that a little bit more over the next couple weeks. The second thing I want you to understand is that because of the image of God, we have unity. So stop the arrogance. Because you are connected. You reflect the image of God just as much as that person on Facebook that keeps saying the most obnoxious things. Just as much as that neighbor who won't stop doing those things. Just as much as that coworker that's such a jerk. Just as much as that family member that doesn't even care about anybody. Just as much as that person that's in prison or should be. just as much as, I mean, pick it. Pick the things that we think we're better than, and I want you to understand that you're not. We all are created in the image of God. So no matter how much you look at a person and think, man, they don't deserve anything. You're right, they don't, and neither do we. I'm beating that same drum again, I guess. But, you know, we all need God's grace. And so I think it's important to understand that there is no one that is lesser than you. No matter how they act in some way, no matter how awful they are, no matter how sinful or how atrocious they are, Hitler was created in the image of God. So on some level, there is something that God has brought us together. I mean, there's obviously a lot more depth to all that. But I want us to understand that before we start just kind of saying, oh, well, they don't deserve my time, or, you know, it's okay if I talk about those people or them, or, you know, just get over that if they're human. I know it's questionable about some people, but if they're human, then they have been created in the image of God, and therefore they have value. Therefore, God says, hey, you know what? They're created too, and their issues, their problems, their idiosyncrasies, their differences than you are on purpose somehow. And, you know, maybe we're the weird ones, and they're the normal ones. Who knows? Well, somebody wrote a book that everybody's normal, and so you get to know them. So I think it's important to understand that when we start talking down about other people, when we start just feeling that way about those people, whether it's something in terms of their physical makeup, their skin color, their accent, you know, if they don't say Ewens, is that how you say it? or if it's something a little bit deeper, like, well, you know them, and, oh, they're so obnoxious. But on some level, we are all, not on some level, we are all created in the image of God. Therefore, we need to realize that we are connected, and everybody deserves hope. Everybody deserves something. And this is what James said about it, as he wrote his book, aptly titled James, in the New Testament. It was a letter. He says, with the tongue, we praise our Lord and Father, and with it, we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness, God's image. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursings. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. He doesn't say it's okay if they act a certain way, or it's okay if they're from Perry County. He says it shouldn't be. There's no room for it. We were just singing praises to God, and if we were using that same mouth to curse other people who are created in God's likeness and God's image, then it should not be. Stop. We need to stop the arrogance. So, because of our image, we have value. So we need to value life or treasure life. We have unity, so we need to stop the arrogance. And the third thing is that we have mission. So get to it. Because God has said, look, I am putting you here. You're in charge. You're running this place. God's still in control. And you can get all theological with me if you want. We can talk about it later. I can prove something. But the short version is that God says, look, you're in charge. You guys are doing it. You guys are on the mission. So get to it. Stop sitting around and saying, well, I'll eventually. No, no. Now. Now God has given you a mission. And here's an interesting little verse that Paul writes in his letter to the church in Corinth. He's writing to them about what they need to be doing about some things. And he says, look, God has given us the task of telling everyone what he is doing. I mentioned this earlier about Jesus' challenge to the disciples, his commission to them to say, hey, you're going to go and do it. He's given us, you, me, you, and you, and you, and you, and you, the task of telling everyone what he is doing. We're Christ's representatives as followers of Jesus. And he's talking to the church here. I should clarify that. He's talking to people that are followers of Jesus. And he says, look, not just only do we represent God in the image of God, but now we're kind of taking it up to the next level. We're now Christ's representatives. God uses us to persuade men and women to drop their differences and enter into God's work of making things right between them. That's the message. But basically, God has given us the challenge to invite other people to a relationship with him. He has given us. We're his representatives. We're speaking for Christ himself now. Become friends with God because he's already a friend with you. God has given us that challenge. God has given us that mission and saying, look, I've created you to represent me on this earth. You've been created in my image. I designed you on perfect, on purpose the way that you are. And that means that every part of you, God has a purpose for that. It's, I don't know, it's like The Hobbit. I'm going to offend my wife because she's very upset about the current movie right now as a book reader. But, you know, I think if I understand the story, the reason I'm going to ruin the, I guess I'm ruining it. I don't know. Read some literature sometime. The Hobbit himself, his name was Bilbo, right? Frodo was the other one. Bilbo was brought along on this journey, this unexpected journey, because he had a purpose to serve. They needed a burglar. They needed someone that could sneak in quietly. And hobbits were known for that. And so all throughout the movie, and I suppose the book, because I don't read literature either, he's kind of tagging along, like, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? And then finally his moment arrives where he gets to do his thing. Because he's not a great fighter. He's not a great sorcerer. He's a hobbit. But his job is to do his thing. And that's kind of this whole idea of the body of Christ. And I have talked for hours about this. But the God has created you and made everything about you because he wants to use you to accomplish his purposes. And that's the deal, that we have been given a mission, and God has you, and you might not know what it is right now, you might not know sure how it works out, but just get to it, start doing it, and see what God wants to do through you. See how God is going to use you and use your issues, and you might say, well, my past was so awful. Maybe God's going to use your awful past to help someone else from having the same awful past. Maybe your past is going to change someone's future. Oh, well, I'm not good at it. Let God use you, because he has given you the job. He has given you the mission. He says, look, you're representing me. You now, followers of me, followers of Jesus, go make more followers of Jesus. And whatever that looks like in your life, get to it. Because God thinks we can do it. God has created us in his image. He didn't have to. Do you understand that? We could be just like everything else and just kind of going and doing and being the way things are. I don't know. What does a cow think about? Chew, 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 swallow, swallow, chew. I mean, I that's what life could be like, I guess. But instead, God has created us in his image, and he's given us a purpose. And that's what it's all about. So understand that you represent him. And that means there's responsibility to that. There's so much to that. That means when you, and I just had a talk. We had a talk with our kids about this the other day. Like, and it's a cheap church cliche, but you might be the only Jesus that anybody ever sees. They might know, oh, you're into that church thing, you're into that God thing, and the way you represent him influences that, affects that. So, you represent him. He designed you in his image. Let's pray. God, thank you for making us the way you did. Thank you for thank you for, I don't know, not giving up what you didn't. Thank you for just designing us to be used by you, designing us in your image to represent you. And I pray that we would wear that title well. That you would help us to represent you in a good way, to be worthy of the calling that you've given us, to be worthy of you saying, hey, I think you can do this. So that we may live for you as that. Help us to just watch ourselves as we consider others and look at the fact that every human being has been created in your image and therefore has value, and therefore doesn't need to be looked down upon or talked about, but should be lifted up as one that, as a heart that you could change just as you've changed ours. So we thank you, Jesus. Just help this kind of whole idea to sink in, and as we are created in your image, that we represent not just some earthly king, but we represent the King of the universe, the creator of everything. It's in his name that we pray. Amen.